There is absolutely no question about it. You are listening to The Swing Era. I'm your host, Bud Pearson, and I would welcome any comments or requests. Just email us. Our address is swingera@earthlink.net. That's swingera@earthlink.net. Back to the swing era, the year is 1952, and here's the Billy May Band.
To be in our late, walking my baby back home. Arm in arm over meadow and farm, walking my baby back home. We go long harmonizing a song, or I'm reciting a poem. Hours go by and they give me the eye, walking my baby back home. while she gives me a smile, snuggles her head on my chest. We startin' to pet, and that's when I get her talcum all over my vest. After I kinda straighten my tie, she has to borrow my comb. One kiss, then I continue again, walking my baby back home. The dark, so I have to park outside of her door till it's light. She says if I try to kiss her, she'll cry. I dry her tears all through the night, hand in hand to a barbecue stand. Right from her doorway we roam. And then it's a pleasure again, walking my baby, talking my baby, loving my baby. I don't mean maybe, walking my baby back home.
On the swing era, the orchestra of Billy May with his August 1951 When My Sugar Walks Down the Street. And in the middle of the stack, Nat Cole, accompanied by Billy May and his orchestra, sang Walkin' My Baby Back Home from a a June 1952 session at Capitol Records. And kicking off the second half of the swing era, the February 1952 May gem, You're Driving Me Crazy, Billy May and his orchestra on the swing era.
Nothing's half as nice as Memphis in June. I can see old Granny cross the street, still rocking. Watching the neighbors go by, Memphis in June, with sweet oleanders
blowing perfume. perfume in the air. Up jumps a moon to make it that much grander. It's paradise, brother, take my advice. Nothing's half as nice as Memphis. Memphis in June.
That was drummer Al Stoller shouting out Eddie Condon, what apparently was an inside joke on Billy May's Fat Man Boogie. The Fat Man, of course, Billy himself. This in August 1951 disc. And before that, Johnny Mercer sang his own tune, Memphis in June, with the Billy May Band, recorded February 1952. And starting the set, the October 1952, Let's Put Out the Lights and Go to Sleep, written by who else? Herman Hupfeld. And you heard it on the Swing Era.
heaven of bones and skin. But when she tells me, baby, she loves me, I feel as mellow as a fella can be. She's so skinny, she's so drawn. When she stands sideways, you think she's gone. But when she calls me baby, I feel fine to think she's frantically, romantically mine. She's slender, but she's tender. She makes my heart surrender. And every night when I hold her tight, the feeling is nice. My arms can go around twice. My lean baby, she's so slim. The broomstick's wider, but not as trim. And when she starts to kiss me, then I know I love her so I'll never ever let her go. No! My lean baby, strange to see. And all that nothing, it belongs to me. And though she may be scrawny, she's okay, because I wouldn't want her any other way. And she's so skinny, she's so drawn. When she stands sideways, you would think that she's gone. But when she calls me baby, I feel fine to think she's frantically, romantically mine. I chased her and I caught her, then a diamond ring I bought her. Hey, the diamond shine, the ring is so fine. But here is the twist, she wears it right on her wrist. My lean baby, she's so slim. A broomstick's wider, but not as trim. And when she starts to kiss me, then I know I love her so I'll never ever let her go. My lean baby, tall and thin.
On the last set, just up, Billy May's Swooping Saxes and Lunsford 2-beat, done to perfection on Diane from February 1952. And before that, a familiar voice with Billy May, Frank Sinatra, sang May's tune Lean Baby, complete with some clever lyrics. And leading off, a January 1952 instrumental version of a tune making the rounds at the time, Unforgettable. This is the same Billy May that earned his stripes with Charlie Barnett and Glenn Miller. However, Billy's recordings were so popular that he was forced to take a band out on the road, something Hollywood leaders and musicians don't like to do. And there you have it, Billy May on the swing era. That's it. Hope you enjoyed Billy May and his orchestra. This is your host, Bud Pearson, inviting you to join us here next week when it's time to jive, when we'll present more artists who created the styles and the sounds of the swing era. See you then, and remember, it don't mean a thing if it ain't got that swing.
Redwood City, a broadcast service of the Sequoia Union High School District. Online at kcea.org, the home of the Big Band. Again, it's time for Yesteryear, a look back at your favorite dramas, westerns, comedies, and musical variety shows from the golden age of radio. Here's your host for Yesteryear, Craig Roberts.
Time once again to settle into your favorite easy chair for another hour of vintage radio. Later on, we'll enjoy the best of Arch Obler with Arch Obler's Plays. But first, on the lighter side, let's spend some time with Burns and Allen. George Burns and Gracie Allen were a pioneering radio act, the pair opening at the Palace Hotel on a bill with Eddie Cantor and Georgie Jessel. Cantor, impressed by Gracie's wit, asked her to appear in his Sunday night NBC program.
she created a minor sensation and was booked, this time with her husband, into Rudy Valley's Fleischman Hour. By 1932, Burns and Allen were signed by CBS for their own radio program. By 38, George Burns and Gracie Allen were among the most established performers on the air. By 1945, Burns and Allen had jumped networks yet once again, taking over NBC's Maxwell House Coffee Time. Their final jump back to CBS came in 1949 with their last full season on radio. By October of 1950, George Burns and Gracie Allen had made the move to television. Return with us now to those fabulous days of yesteryear with the Burns and Allen Show and special guest star Dorothy L'Amour from February of 1944. Another classic radio moment from the archives of yesteryear.
Major Bowes, I miss the shadow nose, Fred Allen's alley folks, the laughter of Duffy's Tavern, Helen Trent, then we went to Can You Top This? Suspense in the Whistler sent those shivers up our spines. Uncle Don, I wish that he was on. Jack Armstrong, Merton Marge, Amos, and Andy. I long to turn the dial again to hear the past smile again. Radio, I miss you, Sodio, Vodio, Dodio, Do. Radio, I miss you.
Well, hello. Come right in. Oh, George, we've got company.
This is Bill Goodwin speaking for Lever Brothers, makers of Swan, the new white floating soap that's pure as fine Castile. Well, it's Tuesday night again, time for another pleasant visit with George Burns and Gracie Allen, our guest, Dorothy L'Amour, with Jimmy Cash and Felix Mills and his orchestra. And now, meet the people who live in the Burns house, George and Gracie. Well, tonight, it is my sad duty to make an announcement that will plunge the music world into deepest gloom. Sugar Throat Burns will sing no more. It seems his feelings were hurt last week, and he's still sulking, despite all the efforts of Mrs. Sugar Throat.
Aw, cheer up, George. Just because Mr. DeMille didn't want you to sing in his pictures doesn't mean that you aren't great.
He laughed at my voice.
Oh, good. What does Cecil B. DeMille know about making pictures, anyway?
I'd rather not talk about it.
Oh, but, darling, I can't stand to see you like this. Those big, soft, wet brown eyes are glazed with pain. Like a disappointed cow.
Won't do any good talking to me, Gracie. I'll never sing again.
Oh, George, don't say that. I know you've been hurt, cruelly hurt, but that happens in Hollywood. Into each life, a little rain must fall. That happens in Hollywood, too.
I told all my friends I'm going to be in DeMille's picture, and then he laughed at my voice.
Oh. Well, don't you worry, dear. All the movie studios will be after you. With Gene Autry and the Army, I'll bet Republic will want you to be their new singing cowboy.
Oh, sure.
Oh, you'd look magnificent on a horse, singing a cowboy song. Oh, I can just see the fade out of the picture. As the horse trots off into the sunset, the last thing we see is your face as you sing.
Well, I'm not going to sing anymore.
Oh, but you're so convincing with those Western songs. Remember at Ronnie Regan's party when you sang Give Me My Boots and Saddle? Ronnie said it was all he could do to keep from giving you a boot.
Very flattered.
Why, this whole town will be after you. As a matter of fact, there was a scout here just this morning asking for you.
Really?
Yeah. He wants you to help his troop collect papers.
I'm going down to the cigar store.
George, please, before you go, unlock those little silver tonsils and give me just one glorious burst of melody. Don't hum, sing.
That was the door buzzer.
Oh, It's probably Mrs. Bundy, the cleaning woman. Come in. Hello, Mrs. Bundy.
Hello, Mrs. Burns. Hello, Mr. Burns.
Goodbye.
My goodness, if the rest of your house looks as bad as your husband, I'm going to have a job straightening it up today.
Oh, Mrs. Bundy, George has sworn never to sing again.
My, how'd you get him to promise that?
Oh, I didn't want him to do it. He did it because he's all hurt and disillusioned. And I've just got to think of some way to snap him out of it.
Well, whenever I feel myself slipping, I pull myself together with numerology.
Oh, sounds like a girdle.
Oh, no. Lots of movie stars use numerology. Why, Dorothy L'Amour uses it all the time.
Oh, then it can't be a girdle.
I should say not. Numerology controls our destinies. Your name tells you what number you vibrate to. You see, we all vibrate to certain numbers.
Yeah, that's true. I'm getting so I shake all over when I hear Mercy Dotes.
Not musical numbers, Mrs. Burns. Real numbers.
Oh.
The letters in your name tell you what number you are. Now, take my name, Fanny Bundy. I'm a 9. Bundy's a 3, and Fanny's a 6.
Oh, really? You know, I would have guessed you were at least an 18.
Numerology is fascinating. Like I said, Dorothy L'Amour won't make a move without it. Right now, she's searching frantically for a leading man who's the number 7.
Oh, are number 7 scarce?
Well, number 7's who sing are. It's a musical picture.
Oh, is that so? Mm-hmm. Mrs. Bundy, is my husband by any chance the number 7?
Well, let's see. George is 3 and Burns is 2. No, he's number 5.
Oh. Well, isn't there some way I could stretch him into a 7?
Well, the letter K is 2. That would make him a 7.
Really? Well, Mrs. Bundy, it looks like Dorothy L'Amour has found her number 7, and George K. Burns will sing again. Come in. Oh, hello, Bill.
Well, hiya, girls. What's the good word?
Numerology.
Numerology?
Yes, George is the number 7.
He is?
Uh-huh. And that makes Dorothy L'Amour vibrate to him.
Well, lucky George. I'm not sure I understand, Gracie.
Well, Dorothy L'Amour is practically on her knees begging for a 7.
Oh, well, that I understand. Been in that same spot many times myself.
Do you vibrate to 7?
Well, 7 or 11. Of course, I also vibrate to 4.
You do?
Oh, sure. Every time I think of Swan being 4 soaps in 1, I vibrate with joy.
Oh, Bill, you and your 4 soaps in 1.
There I go, see? Just can't help myself, Grace. You see, Swan's the white floating soap that's wonderful for your hands and face, bathing the baby for dishes and for light laundry. 4 swell soaps in 1, a great wartime buy.
Well, anyway, Bill, thanks to numerology, George is going to make a picture with Dorothy L'Amour.
Well, got himself a candid camera, huh?
Oh, no. No, I mean he's going to act with her.
Oh.
Sing with her. Make love to her. Oh, my goodness. Oh, make love to her. Bill, I may get vibrated right out of her husband.
Oh, Gracie, George won't fall for Dottie.
Well, maybe not, but can Dottie resist George? She's only human, you know.
Gracie, she'd only go for a pan like George's if it held dishes and Swan suds. Well, you know that women are crazy about Swan for dishes. Those hard-working Swan suds make short work of dishwashing. And at the same time, Swan is so mild and gentle, it helps keep your hands from getting rough and red.
Oh, I don't know, Bill. Beautiful girls have fallen for George before.
Who?
Me.
I should have guessed.
And I'm not too sure I can trust George either. Dorothy L'Amour is pretty alluring.
Well, Dorothy L'Amour has nothing on you, Gracie.
No, she hasn't got much on herself either. That's what worries me.
Tonight, our young tenor, Jimmy Cash, sings the romantic ballad, The Music Stops. Jimmy?
Charms. The lights were low.
left the sand, and we were in heaven, dancing on a cloud, way off in the blue. The music stopped, and people were glancing, but we went on dancing, for we didn't know.
Now, Gracie has found out that Dorothy L'Amour, who believes in numerology, is searching desperately for a singing leading man who vibrates to the number 7. So Gracie has altered George's vibrations and is now calling on the glamorous Miss L'Amour.
Dorothy, you're at Paramount, aren't you?
Yes.
Would you do me a favor?
Why, of course, Gracie.
Would you ask Paulette Goddard and Veronica Lake to please stop fighting over my husband?
Gracie, I didn't know your husband was at Paramount.
Oh, they don't let him walk around in the open.
No?
No, they're afraid Loretta Young might kidnap him. You see, my husband is so frightfully handsome.
Really? Well, whatever happened to your first husband, George Burns?
Oh, this is the same one. I'm still married to George Burns.
Well, I must not remember George very well. Isn't he kind of short with a little pot tummy?
Oh, no. You're thinking of Cary Grant.
Well, what does George look like?
And he has a beautiful singing voice, too.
He sings?
Like a nightingale. You know how the girls swoon when Frank Sinatra sings?
Yes.
Well, when George sings, Frank Sinatra swoons.
That shouldn't take much.
Well, of course, George's main attraction is that he's a number 7. But, of course, you wouldn't understand that. It's numerology.
Wait a minute. Number 7? George is a number 7?
So where do you get your hair done, Dorothy?
Never mind about my hair. Gracie, that figure... It's amazing.
Oh, thank you. Yours is kind of pretty, too.
No. I mean about George being a number 7. Gracie, I must have him.
Dorothy, please.
I must have him for my picture. Where can I find him?
Well, right now he's home hiding from Claudette Colbert.
George is just the man I'm looking for. He's handsome, he sings, and above all, he's a number 7. Wait a minute. According to numerology, George Burns would be a number 5.
George K. Burns?
Oh. What's his middle name?
Kansas City.
Kansas City?
He was born there.
Oh. Oh, I see. He was named after Kansas City.
Yeah, shortly after.
Gracie... Why don't I go home with you right now and talk to George? I can't wait to see if he's as handsome as you say.
Well, why not arrange the whole thing on the phone?
On the phone?
Well, yes, and then you can see him when you start shooting the picture. Here's our phone number. You can call him.
But why can't I see him?
Well, the poor boy is so exhausted from being chased by all those women, especially today. You see, today Rosalind Russell chased him, and she has such long legs. So, goodbye, Dorothy.
Well, I can't let a number 7 get away from me.
Hello?
Hello. Is this George Burns?
Yes.
This is Dorothy L'Amour.
Who?
Dorothy L'Amour. Look, George, would you please... Please be my new leading man.
Who'd you say this was?
Dorothy Lamour.
Gracie, will you stop with this nonsense?
This isn't Gracie, it's Dorothy. Listen, George, you're a number 7, and I'm in tune with your vibrations.
You're also a little bit nuts, aren't you?
George, I'm going to sing at the Hollywood Canteen tonight. Would you make it a duet with me? Then, maybe I can change your mind.
Oh, sure, sure. Shall I wear a sarong?
You still don't believe it's me, do you?
No.
Well, you wait there. I'll come right over.
Yeah, do that. Come in. Well, I'll be darned. It is Dorothy Lamour.
Quick, where's Mr. Burns?
I'm Mr. Burns.
Oh, how do you do? I'd like to see your son, George.
I'm George Burns.
Oh, no, I want the George Burns who's married to Gracie.
That was me you talked to on the phone, Dorothy. And I'll be glad to be your new leading man and sing at the canteen with you tonight.
Oh, hello, Dorothy, what are you doing here?
I'm beginning to wonder. Gracie, I'd like to speak to you alone, please.
You would? Excuse us, dear.
Now, Gracie.
Now, when do you get your hair done, Dorothy?
Never mind that. There's something rotten in Denmark.
Well, I should think so, with all those Nazis there.
You know what I mean. And now that I've seen George, the whole deal's off, Gracie. No canteen and no picture.
But, Dorothy, he's a 7. If you don't use him, you'll have to give up numerology.
And if I do, I'll have to give up pictures. Goodbye, Gracie.
Time for Felix Mills and the orchestra and the old favorite, Swinging Down the Lane. George doesn't know that Dorothy Lamour has changed her mind about singing with him, and he is now at the canteen rehearsing their duet. Outside his dressing room door stands a worried Gracie. She is seeking advice from a handsome man, a man who is both wise and understanding, despite his extreme youth and good looks.
What shall I do, Bill?
Well, gee, I don't know, Gracie. Why not just walk in and tell him?
Oh, no, I can't do that. You see, George is not like other men. He's sensitive and high-strung, like a fine pedigreed Pekingese.
Well, there is a resemblance, yes. To a Pekingese, I think.
The shock might make him do something drastic. Why, he's liable to run right down to the ocean and throw himself on the beach and cry all night.
We wouldn't want that to happen.
Oh, and he's so happy now. I just can't stand to tell him. It would break his poor little heart.
Yeah, I guess it will.
Oh, just think of George. His head hanging, his shoulders drooping, his chest sagging, his footsteps heavy as lead.
Yeah, and then think of him after he hears the bad news.
Oh, I know, Bill.
What?
Maybe I can talk George out of working with Dorothy.
Yeah?
That'll save his pride.
Well, you think you can do it, Gracie?
Well, I can try. You wait here.
The night is young, the skies are clear, and if you want to go walking, dear, it's delightful, it's delicious.
Hello, dear.
Hello, dear.
Gee, my voice sounds richer and deeper than ever tonight. I can hardly believe it's me singing unless I look in the mirror and see my mouth open.
Well, close it and come on home.
But I haven't done my duet with Dorothy yet. Now go away and let me rehearse. The night is young, the skies are...
I'm already the forgotten woman.
You're the what?
The forgotten woman. The wife of a big star who goes up and up and up while his forgotten wife goes down and down and down.
Look, Gracie...
Oh, your public will take you away from me. Lonesomeness will drive me down and down until I'm just a shell. A beautiful husk who's lost her corn.
Listen, dear.
You go up and up and up, and I'll go down and down and down.
Honey,
I'll sink lower and lower and become coarser and coarser until I reach the gutter.
Oh, honey, you could never do that.
Gutter butt, Mac.
Gracie, what's eating you?
Oh, all right. You may as well know the truth. I'm afraid that you and Dorothy will fall madly in love.
That's silly.
Oh, is it? Listen, George. When the lighted match of her charm is dropped into the gas tank of your personality, there's got to be an explosion.
This is ridiculous. Now run along and let me rehearse.
You won't come home with me?
No.
Very well, dear.
Oh.
Any luck, Gracie?
Oh, no. We've got to get Dorothy to change her mind. Bill, do you think you would get any place with Dorothy Lamour?
Well, it'll be fun trying.
Oh, good. Now, there's her dressing room. See what you can persuade her to do.
Yeah, man.
Come in.
Excuse me, Miss Lamour. Gracie wants me to talk to you about George.
Nothing doing. I found out that George isn't a number 7 at all. He faked the middle initial K just to make him a 7.
What a dirty trick.
Yes. Say, you're kind of handsome. What's your name?
Bill K. Goodwin.
Bill K. Goodwin?
Uh-huh.
Why, you're a real number 7.
Well, my friends call me Sev for short.
You might do as the lead in a Saucy Island picture. Can you act?
Can I act? Dottie, get a load of this. Oh, oonga boonga. You, Dottie. Me, Bill. Me give you big bar swan soap.
What's that supposed to be? Pigeon English?
No, that's swan English, Dottie. You see, Swan, the white floating soap, is 4 soaps in one. The soap for your hands and face, for bathing the baby, and for dishes and light laundry. 4 swell soaps in one.
You want to be my leading man or my laundry man?
Huh? Oh, your leading man, Dottie. And what a picture it'll be. Just picture us in the quiet of the tropical night, listening to the gurgle and splash of the water.
We're on the beach.
No, we're bathing the baby with Swan.
Where did that come from?
The swan? Oh, I brought that with me. Swan's great for bathing babies. It's as pure as fine Castile's, and a baby's soap must be mild. Swan's as mild and gentle as a baby's kiss. And if Swan's that good, well, it must be terrific.
You're nutty. But you're cute. Say, by the way, can you sing?
Oh, can I sing, Dottie? Just picture me in a leopard skin, will you? Singing, singing the Hawaiian war chant. Take a cake of swan and break a cake of swan in two. Half you put into the bathroom for your hands and face, and the other half in your kitchen sink. Call Mama, he leave her brothers. Oh, wait, hey,
cut it out. Cut
What's
it out.
Matter? What's the matter, Dottie?
Well, you're supposed to be my tropical lover, and all you talk about is swan. Do I remind you of a swan or something?
Well, you both have a beautiful neck.
Well, it looks like that's more than we're going to have.
Oh. Well, let's make up for lost time. Come here, Dottie.
Well, Bill, did you accomplish anything?
That I did.
Well, Dorothy, are you going to sing the duet with George?
Sure, Gracie, I'll do it for you.
Oh, thank you.
And thank you for such a cute leading man.
Oh, is he going to be your leading man?
Sure. He's a little wolfish, but he's cute.
Wolfish?
And how? We hadn't been alone 2 minutes till he kissed me.
Oh, my goodness, I was afraid this might happen.
What?
Oh, your match has dropped into his gas tank. Oh, excuse me, Dorothy. Dear, which will it be, a career for George or a husband for me? Oh, a husband for me. I'll kick his career right out the window.
The night is young, the stars are clear.
George! And George, do you still insist on singing that duet with Dorothy?
Certainly.
Oh, well, all right. Let me have that arrangement you're going to do. I want to make a few changes in it.
Okay, here, but hurry. It's almost time for the number.
Thank you, boys. It's nice to be at the canteen again. And now I'd like to introduce a new singing team, Dorothy Lamour and Sugar Throat Burns. They will sing a song which has just been especially arranged by me.
The night is young, the skies are clear, and if you want to go walking, dear, it's delightful, it's delicious, it's lovely. I understand the reason why you're sentimental, 'cause so am I.
It's delightful, it's delicious, it's lovely.
You can tell at a glance what a swell night this is for romance. You can hear dear Mother Nature murmuring low.
Oh.
Let yourself go so sweetly, my chickadee. And when I kiss you, just say to me,
it's
delightful,
it's
delicious,
it's
delectable,
it's
delirious,
it's
dilemma,
it's
delimit,
it's
deluxe,
it's
delovely.
Gracie, what did you do to me? That'll finish my career.
Yeah, I know. Come along, dear. You're my gas tank, and we'll use my matches.
I'm confused.
George and Gracie will be right back, so I've only a few seconds to remind you that whether you're a pin-up girl or a grandmother, your complexion deserves the purest, mildest soap that money can buy. You want a soap that's pure as fine Castile's? You want Swan. You want a soap that's so mild it's kind to even a baby's tender skin? Again, you want Swan. Yes, and you want a soap that'll give you a thick, rich lather at the touch of a hand. So, sister, you really want Swan. And when you get Swan, remember, it's also great for the baby and perfect for dishes and light laundry. So put your wartime pennies on a four-time winner, the new white floating soap, Swan. Now here again, are George and Gracie.
Well, Gracie, I've got a big thrill for you.
Yeah, what is it?
Next week, our guest star will be Alan Ladd.
Oh. Really?
Well, aren't you thrilled? Well, gee, Gracie, he thrills all the women.
Well, dear, they're not married to you.
Oh, good night.
Our guest tonight, Dorothy Lamour, will be seen shortly in the Paramount picture And the Angels Sing. The makers of Swan, the new white floating soap, join George and Gracie in inviting you to tune into your Columbia station again next Tuesday, same time. Our guest, Alan Ladd. The following week, Paul Lucas. Remember, George Burns, Gracie Allen, CBS, next Tuesday night. Now, till next Tuesday, this is Bill Goodwin saying, well, I, Swan, how about you? This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
From February of 1944, it's been the Burns and Allen Show with special guest star Dorothy Lamour. In a moment, Arch Obler's plays and a gallery of big shots as this edition of Yesteryear continues.
The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear. Here's Craig Roberts.
Arch Obler's plays was a series of original dramas by the medium's Wonder Boy. The late 1930s had been a golden age of experimental drama on radio. NBC had its long-running Radio Guild and in March of 1939 added Obler's plays. Obler, who grew up in Chicago, one of the busiest centers of radio drama in the 1930s. After his initial success at NBC, Obler began writing mini-dramas for the network's Grand Hotel and went from there to the Rudy Valley program, where he landed in 1936 at an eerie little midnight program called Lights Out. The show ran the gamut from fantasy to tragedy, the same kind of horror that he'd done on Lights Out. Some of the stars included the likes of Betty Davis, Edmund O'Brien, Frank Lovejoy, James Cagney, and others. Plays closed in March of 1940, but in April of 1945, it turned up again on Mutual with a new version of Plays. Plays ran through the summer on Mutual and ended in October of 1945. Return with us now to those fabulous days of yesteryear with Arch Obler's Plays and A Gallery of Big Shots from July of 1945, another classic radio program from the radio vault of yesteryear.
Mutual presents Arch Obler's Plays. In this series, we hope to bring you dramas full of the excitement and the meaning of plays told in relation to the expanding world we live in. Tonight, inspired by a suggestion from GI friend Elliot Lewis, Arch Obler presents A Gallery of Big Shots. Feminine Big Shots. I hasten to speak to the women in my audience. Dear ladies, believe me, I like you very much, so that if anything in what follows resembles dislike of the fair sex, the resemblance is absolutely accidental. Because these women we are going to speak about are of a special sort.
Bragging, swaggering, trumpeting, strutting, magniloquent.
Quite, thank heavens, unlike you. For these women are big shots. Gallery of Big Shots. Portrait number one, Miss Beautiful.
I just loved singing her music, don't you, Mr. Leahy?
Yeah. Yeah, sure do.
Is that Eddie who just came in?
Eddie? Eddie who?
Eddie Sullivan.
Oh.
He's just the sweetest. At Madison Square Garden, one of those huge benefits, he had them throw the spotlight right down on little me and Walter W.
Mitchell?
As far as I'm concerned, he'll go unmentionable. The nerve. You know what he said about me?
No. No, I'm sorry, I don't.
He said that, as far as he was concerned, all the Atlantic City bathing contest winners could be laid end to end, and it wouldn't make much difference. Can you imagine saying a thing like that?
No. I can't.
Just because a girl has ability enough to win a competition is no reason to talk about her that way, now, is it?
No. Of course not. Another drink?
No, no wine is my limit. I'll just sit and toy with my glass the rest of the evening.
Is that a fact?
Yes. Max told me.
Max who?
Max Factor, somebody. Told me that alcohol has a sort of effect on the skin pores, causing them to constrict or expand. There's something that's very negative. He said that. I just toy with one drink all night.
Sure, sure. Anyone as beautiful as you are has got to sort of watch out.
Now that, Mr. Leahy, was a very profound thing you just said.
Was it?
It was, indeed. Well, I've got to treat my face and my figure as if it belonged to somebody else.
Yeah.
Why, when I see my face on the cover of Life magazine, a red book, I'm as critique, as they say, about how I look as if it was somebody else. Why, if there's a single hair out of place, I simply can't eat for at least 24 hours.
You don't say. Have another drink? Oh, I beg your pardon.
That's perfectly all right. Like a certain producer whose name will go unmentionable once said, he said, Moselle, a face and a body like yours is a holy trust to be held like a chalice. You understand the assimilation, don't you, Mr. Leahy?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I'm sure you did. Well, it's a great responsibility, Mr. Leahy. Last year, I was on 10 covers and over 15 billboards, not counting the subway, when I was Miss Pure Gold Beer of 1944. So you might say my face is public property. I think that everybody who's in the public eye has a great responsibility, just as much as if they were...
I guess they're going to start the floor show.
Oh, yes. Did you know I studied voice 1 week?
You don't say.
Greetings and welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Before we begin our very small entertainment, may I introduce a few celebrities with us tonight.
Mr. Leahy, did you give the head waiter the note I gave you?
Oh, sure, Moselle, sure.
First, I see a very beautiful lady, a famous beauty contest winner and cover girl. May we pay reverence to beauty. The spotlight on Mosel.
Thank you. Thank you. You see what I mean, Mr. Leahy? It's a great responsibility.
A gallery of big shots. Portrait number 2. Executive, War Crop.
Miss Gatsky, Miss Gatsky, please cease work, Miss Gatsky.
Sorry.
Girls, I have a very important announcement to make. As you all know, ever since our Mr. Peterson, Corporal Peterson, was called to the colors of our country to serve in the armed forces, this department has been without a leader, so to speak, because, as you all know, my duties are upstairs with posting and billing, not here with customer mail. Girls, your new supervisor, Miss Virginia Clinton. Girls, Miss Clinton.
Thank you, girls. Thank you. I want you to know that I consider it a great honor and privilege having been appointed to be your supervisor. I, too, began as a typist in the Chicago branch of this organization and worked my way up through the ranks, so to speak. So believe me, I know your problems. And I'm thoroughly sympathetic to them. I'm going to depend on each and every one of you for suggestions. What you will want, I will want.
Miss Clinton, would it be possible...
Not now, dear. May I state first that in times such as these, even as some fight on the war front, our typewriters and shorthand books are the weapons with which we go out and conquer. I am sorry one of you saw fit to laugh at that statement. It definitely shows an improper, subversive attitude. From my experience in our Chicago plant, I am to make the following recommendations to Mr. Eppes, our vice president in charge. First, each of you girls will be divided. That is to say, into groups of four, which will be called a squad. Each squad shall have appointed to it a fifth girl, who will be the squadron leader, and who will be responsible for the output of said squad. These squadron leaders will be chosen by your supervisor on the basis of executive ability and company loyalty, and will be given the title of sergeant. Every two squads will be part of a platoon, which in turn will be in charge of a girl chosen on the basis of executive ability, company loyalty, and will be known as a lieutenant. If you please, girls,
The sergeant's duties will be as follows. 1. To see that typewriters are kept in perfect order and covered at the close of the business day. The lieutenant's duties will be as follows. 1. To see that the sergeants properly execute their offices. And 2. To bring into play their own personal initiative when crises, such as crises, occur. And 3. To correct the, shall we say, unbusinesslike apparel certain of you girls are now wearing. There is one regulation, however, which I wish to be put in force at once. From my previous experience in our Chicago plant, I am strongly of the opinion, and I'm sure you will concur with me, that entirely too much time is being spent off the floor. Beginning at once, rest periods would be limited to 5 minutes in each hour. If any emergencies occur, permission to leave your desk must be obtained from me. Well, has anyone anything they wish to state openly?
I'll hit, sir.
Who said that? Who said that? You will step forward. How dare you? Step forward.
A gallery of big shots. Portrait number 3. Hired girl.
Maybelle, can I come in, please? It's Louise. Maybelle, I know you're in there. I just want to talk to you. Okay, I'm coming in. Gee, Maybelle, you might have asked me to come in. Jeepers, we're still friends. Well, are you just going to sit there? Aren't you going to say anything?
Got nothing to say.
Jeepers, Maybelle, don't be a character. After all, I didn't do anything.
Got nothing to say.
Maybelle, you just can't leave us. You just can't. Why, you're one of the family. Yeah, it's my party next party. What'll I do if you don't... Oh, who in the world is that?
Mabel, are you in?
What are you doing here?
What do you think?
How you doing?
Not so good.
Okay, Hammerhead, find the nearest exit and let a man take over.
Where'll I find one?
Okay, go on. I ain't woofing. Blow, small fry.
All right, Wonder Man. I hope you do better than I did. You better.
Well, hiya, Maybelle. You won't talk, huh? Well, that's okay. I like my women strong and silent. Hey, all this stuff about your quitting, that's just scuttlebutt, huh?
Got nothing to say.
Oh, come on. Gosh, whatever it is, I can straighten it out. Okay, give.
Gave him a notice.
Hey, now, wait a minute, Mabel. Listen, we can't get along without you. Holy cat, you're the best cook. Your pies. Well, gosh, Mabel, we can't. You just can't walk out on us like this. Jeepers, aren't you going to say anything?
Got nothing to say.
Oh, Mabel, gee... There's somebody knocking. Okay, I'll see who it is. Gosh, Pop.
Well, what are you doing here?
Well, I just came up to talk to her.
Oh, hey, look.
Oh, gosh, no. Dad, you just got to...
All right. Come on.
Okay.
Well, Maybelle. You mind if I talk to you a bit?
Got nothing to say.
Well, I've got a great deal to say. I think all this is nonsense. You've got a good home here, good salary. We like you. There's no logical reason for any change.
Gave him a notice.
Yes, I know, but look, Mabel. Ever since the war, there have been... Well, you might say there's been a procession of servants in this house. None of them, not one, has come up to even the lower standards of the sort of help. Mabel, believe me. I was beginning to think that all potatoes were carbonated and that soup was made out of dishwater. But you, Maybelle, you've given me new hope. I was beginning to think, no, I was positive, that you were going to be with us, well, at least for the duration. And now to come home and find that you're talking about leaving, to have to go through... Oh, I couldn't endure it again. $10 more a month. No, make it 20. Do you hear that, Maybelle? I'm going to raise your salary $20 a month.
Gave him a notice.
All right, the best of us can make mistakes and change our minds.
You say I made a mistake?
No, I didn't mean that you made a mistake. I was speaking in generalities. Maybelle, listen. I apologize for my wife. I don't know what happened. I can't believe that she... I mean, all right, whatever it was. She was in the wrong and you were in the right, and I apologize for it. You hear that, Maybelle? I'm apologizing.
Mrs. Martin.
Sure, but I'm apologizing for it. It's the same thing.
No.
But I won't have Alice say legare or no say legare. There are limits. I mean to have to... Maybell, $30 a month. $30 a month. And every other Wednesday off, too. I can arrange that between the kids and myself. We can do the work. $30 a month, your regular time off, and Wednesdays. Isn't that wonderful, Maybell?
Wednesdays?
Yes, yes.
$30 a month more?
Yes, of course.
The missus has taken it all back?
Whatever it was, absolutely. Well, Maybell, what's the happy word?
Well, Mr. Martin.
Yes?
I'll think it over.
A gallery of big shots. Portrait number 4, Chanteuse.
Shut the door! Will somebody shut that broken door?
Max, we can talk.
Please, Felice.
We can talk, Max. We can talk about when you were a baby.
Oh, now, Felice.
Where were you a baby, Max? Was it Nizhny Novgorod or Schnippeshik?
Oh, now, Felice.
Or was it Delancey Street under a wet rock? Follow the Herod and he said, oh, they're a nice little dance team just starting out. 10 curtain calls, you hear? 10 curtain calls.
Felice, your voice.
The devil with my voice. You get them off the bill. Get them off.
But, Felice.
What do you mean you can't do it? What do you think I pay you 10% for? To smoke my cigarettes and drink my liquor?
Oh, Felice.
Oh, so that's it. You're managing them, are you?
Oh, Felice.
Then go. But don't think that's all.
Oh, no, Felice.
Who won the Radio Digest poll as the outstanding chanteuse of 1945? I did.
Yeah, yeah. But
now, don't talk so much. You fire that rootin' John Art.
Oh, Felice.
Press agent. Press agent. The only thing he can press is his hands. Up at 5 o'clock in the morning to break a rootin' bottle over the back of a ship.
But, Felice...
But is the ship? Oh, no. He turns it out to be a oil tanker. Me, Felice, launch a rootin' oil tanker. And at the same time, Hildegard launches a cruiser. I won't be belittled. I won't. I won't. I want a battleship.
Felice, listen.
Why, you rootin' little squirt. How dare you walk in here without knocking? What do you think this is, a saloon? I ought to...
Felice, listen. Some... They're playing your cue.
What? Oh, my gosh. Oh, gosh. Lily, my handkerchief. My gosh, I can't sleep without my handkerchief, Lily!
Felice, Felice, you fired Lillian an hour ago.
Oh, go get her back! What's that? Door, door, door!
He's gone, you're on, Felice.
All the rooks, you jerks.
Thank you, thank you, thank you, my dear people, thank you. How nice of you to come visit me in my little copra room. And look at all the dear servicemen. Look at the dear little sailor. Hello, you sweet little thing, you. There's something about the sailor. Oh, stay right there, handsome. I have an organ for you because tonight the Navy is close to my heart. Yes, this morning, bright and early, I was visiting the Navy. Yes, this morning, I was on an official duty for the Navy. Our dear, wonderful Navy. A hand for the dear, wonderful Navy. Yes, this morning, your little Felice gave birth to... Oh, what am I saying? Christened with her own little hands. A beautiful, beautiful Navy ship. So now for the Navy and all of you dear friends, I sing a little song which I first introduced. Your dear...
All of a sudden my heart sings when I remember little things, the way you dance and hold me tight, the way you kiss and say goodnight. Each of us in this time of war must love each other more and more. The love I bear for humanity, it is my heart. It is all of me.
A gallery of big shots. Portrait number 5, Beautician.
Well, well, well. If it isn't our Mrs. Cragen. And how are you?
How do you do, Miss Westland? If my hair ever dries, I'll be very well myself.
Oh, patience, my dear Mrs. Cragen. Patience. Rome wasn't built in a day, and our salon can't do justice to your coiffure in less than 2 hours. Ars escalarimatum. See you later. Ah, good morning, Mrs. Nicholas. And what are we doing to you this morning?
Well, haven't I my hair Wilson, too?
Ah, having one of our Lorraine oil shampoos. Excellent, excellent. The dust in the air. I tell you, something must be done about the dust in the air. Don't you think so?
Don't you set a hair you ever had? Of course.
Personally, I believe this war has something to do with it. All the excitement that's bound to raise dust. Irene.
Yes, Miss Westland?
Give dear Mrs. Nicholas an extra egg on her hair this morning. Shortages or no, we do want her to look lovely and a credit to our salon. Quickly, get the egg, quickly. Be that picky to that. See you later.
Hello?
Hello? Irene, I thought you told me there was a telephone call.
But there was, I told
But there's no one. Hello? Hello? Yes. Yes, this is Miss Westland. Who? Oh, yes, Mrs. Gillum. Yes, yes, this is Miss Westland. Is there something you wanted? Oh, an appointment. Really? I'm sorry, I don't believe that's possible. No, not tomorrow. No, nor Saturday. My dear Mrs. Gillum, it isn't a question of whether it's today or tomorrow or next week. I'm just afraid we're all booked up. No, no, there's nothing strange about it. Appointments are available only to those who keep their appointments. Yes, how nice of you to remember. You did indeed. Called out of town. I do not feel that is a proper excuse. You know about our 24-hour cancellation rule. Your son. Oh, yes, the lieutenant. He came back where? Convalescent hospital. The army said. That's very nice, Mrs. Gillum. But I consider this salon also part of the war activities. I say there is no greater morale builder than a good cold wave. Appointments must be kept. I'm so sorry.
A gallery of big shots. Portrait number 6, Bobby Soxer.
Quiet. Let us see.
Oh, yes, tell us, Punky.
Everything.
Well, I got on the bus, and the first thing I noticed...
Difference. We know you got on the bus.
Tell us what happened after.
We want to hear.
Quiet, Ed. Let her talk.
My goodness, if every word I'm going to say, you're going to jump at me like that.
Oh, no, Pokey, we won't.
Oh, I don't know. No, you better not. I mean, after all, if you want to hear...
Tell it any way you want to, Pokey.
Any way. All right, that's better. So I got on the bus, and the first thing I said to myself was, Pokey, there's no reason to be nervous. He may be great, but he's human. And the way it says, the greater they are, the humbler their souls. I kept saying that to myself all the time I was riding along. Well, pretty soon, here I was.
Where?
In a theater, you moron.
Oh, in the theater.
Oh, what happened? And there I was. And some big goon of a doorman tried to give me a brush off. But I drew myself up, and I said... He sent for me. And he said, oh, yeah. And I said, oh, yeah. And that got monotonous. So I pulled out the letter, and you should have seen his eyes. And then I was there. I knocked on the door. A man opened the door. No, of course not. It was his manager or something. He said, and what can I do for you, young lady? And I handed him the letter. And he read it. And he opened up the door, and I went in, and there I was.
Where?
His dressing room, stupid. And there he was.
Oh, bliss.
Oh, it's too desperate.
Well, tell us what happened.
Oh, yes, what happened?
Will you be quiet?
I said, hi, Frankie.
Well?
Yes. Then he said, hi.
And then?
Then? Somebody said, you're on, Mr. Sinatra. He said, goodbye. And I said, goodbye, Frankie.
Why, Frankie? Golly, Pokey, you've lived.
A gallery of big shots. Final portrait. Commentator.
We'll be all right, sir.
set up the microphone here, Miss Compton?
Yes, yes, anywhere will do. Rollins, what time do we go on the air?
In about 3 minutes, Miss Compton, are you set?
Yes, of course.
Yeah, you're always right in there with a news brief, aren't you, Miss Compton?
One does what one can.
Oh, you do better than that. We were having an argument back in the station. How many newspapers you win now, Miss Compton? How many?
Well, one dozen.
Oh, sure, I get it.
I should say 280 publications. Then, of course, there are the Sunday editions.
There she blows. Meeting's come in order.
Yes, yes.
It sure is something Wilson FDR would have liked to have seen. It sure is.
Yes, Woodrow Wilson and Franklin Delano Roosevelt.
Take it in 5 seconds. 5, 4, 3, 2.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Margaret Compton bringing you a special broadcast from the city of the Golden Gate. I'm speaking to you tonight from a broadcast booth overlooking the opening session of the United Nations Conference on... forgive me, I can never remember names. I had a paper here. Oh, yes, the United Nations Conference on International Organization. Right at this moment, a very dignified gentleman is addressing the assemblage. The matter of fact is, from my broadcasting booth, I'm looking right down at him. I believe at the moment he's talking about, an international court of justice to decide legal disputes between nations in order to prevent wars. But as important as that may be, I'm sure you folks out there are much more interested in the behind-the-scenes stories. Now, on my way up here from Hollywood, I rode up with a certain producer who told me in complete confidence that Sheikh Ala bin something or other, who's the Arabian delegate to this conference, is a great fan of Van Sheridan's. In fact, one wall of his tent is simply covered with pictures of the Warner Brothers star, who incidentally is not at this peace conference, but en route to Florida with a certain publicity man who is rumored to be her latest heart, and who incidentally started in the picture business publicizing that great classic, The Sheik, with Rudolph Valentino, which makes it a pretty small world after all. Right at this moment, the very distinguished gentleman at the podium is talking something about economic and social... Oh, we'll come back to that. Speaking of distinguished gentlemen, reminds me of a story told in complete confidence by Charles Coburn. Charlie, or Chucky, as we know him, was at a party recently, and as he sat there with his favorite orange juice in his hand, in came a certain little RKO starlet with one of those hats. And I mean one of those hats. Well, Chucky took one look at that hat, and he... Oh, by the way, speaking of hats, last night I was at the top of the mark here in dear little old San Francisco, and Mrs. Anthony Eden, at least someone said she was Anthony Eden's wife, he's that tall, handsome Britisher all the girls are swooning about, and speaking of swooning, oh dear, I'm sorry, but my little announcer is signaling to me that the special 5 minutes from the great special San Francisco conference are up. So this is your confidential friend, Margaret Compton, speaking to you through my 280 columns and over 196 radio stations coast to coast with the latest, the most authentic, the most important personality stories of the day. Today, through special arrangement, directly from the United Nations Conference. That's all. Goodbye. Farewell. Fini.
You have just heard Big Shot, a new play by Arch Obler. The cast in the order of their appearance in the gallery of Big Shots were Miss Beauty, Doreen Tuttle, Executive, Mary Jane Croft, Hired Help, Jane Morgan and Barbara Eiler, Chanteuse, Lynn Whitney, Beautician, Helga Moray, Bobby Soxer, Louise Erickson, Commentator, Dorothy Scott. The original music was composed and conducted by Jack Meekin. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
From July of 1945, it's been Arch Obler's plays with a gallery of big shots. Well, I'm afraid that's all the time we have today, but join us again next week at the same time, and why not invite a friend to listen to enjoy more great moments from the golden age of radio. I'm Craig Roberts with those fabulous days of yesteryear. Till next time, so long.
Radio, remember radio. We'd sit and close our eyes and use our imagination. The comedy, mystery, a fireside chat. Together we sat, listening nightly to our favorite shows. Radio, I miss you so. Do 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 radio. I miss you so.
preceding program copyright Edgewater Productions. All rights reserved. KCEA Atherton Redwood City, a broadcast service of the Sequoia Union High School District, home of Tide Academy, the peninsula's leading school for technology, innovation, design, and engineering.
Sweet again, the glamour, the glory that we know, will I find when we meet again? The glamour, the glory still aglow. But tonight, let us forget tomorrow here. Under the midnight blue, love will bloom and flower in the starlit hour with you.
Hit music right now. The only station that plays the coolest hits by the coolest artists. The latest hits and greatest memories on Big Band 89.1 KCEA.
Sycamore, moonlight in Vermont, icy finger waves, ski trails down a mountainside, snowlight. Telegraph cables, they sing down the highway and travel each bend in the road. People who meet in this romantic setting are so hypnotized by the lovely shadows through the trees, snowdrifts shining in the dark, moonlight in Vermont.
trouble, 'cause that man of mine ain't coming home no more. Supper time, kids will soon be yelling for their supper time. How'll I keep from telling that that man of mine ain't coming home no more? How'll I keep explaining when they ask me where he's gone? How'll I keep from crying when I bring their supper on? How can I remind them to pray at their humble board? How can I be thankful when they start to thank the Lord? Supper time, I should set the table, 'cause it's supper time. Somehow I'm not able, 'cause that man of mine ain't coming home no more.
In your Easter bonnet, with all the frills upon it, you'll be the grandest lady in the Easter parade. I'll be all in clover, and when they look you over, I'll be the proudest fellow in the Easter parade. On the Avenue, Fifth Avenue, the photographers will snap us, and you'll find that you're in the road of gravure. I could write a sonnet about your Easter bonnet and of the girl I'm taking to the Easter parade.
Not for all the rice in China, not for all the grapes in France, would I exchange the pleasure that I get from every measure when we dance? Not for all the kids in Scotland, not for all the bulls in Spain, would I give up conniving at your plans, although you're driving me insane? Not for all the onions in Bermuda, all the watches that are made by the Swiss, would I exchange that first kiss that you gave me? Not for all the beans in Boston, not for all the weekend tours, would I agree to part with all the joy you filled my heart with when you said I'm yours.
Difference a day made, 24 little hours brought the sun and the flowers where there used to be rain. My yesterday was blue, dear. Today I'm part of you, dear. Since you said you were mine, what a difference a day made. There's a rainbow before me. Skies above can't be stormy. Since that moment of bliss, that thrilling kiss, it's heaven when you find romance on your menu. What a difference a day made, and the difference is you. Thank you.
What a difference a day made. There's a rainbow before me. Skies above can't be stormy. Since that moment of bliss, that thrilling kiss, it's heaven when you find romance on your menu. What a difference a day made, and the difference is you.
Hi, this is Bud Pearson, host of The Swing Era, where you'll hear the bands and the singers of that exciting time of the 30s and 40s called The Swing Era.
Saturday mornings at 9 Pacific on Big Band 89.1 KCEA.
Just too marvelous for words. Like glorious, glamorous, that'll stand by amorous. It's all too wonderful, I'll never find the words. Say enough, tell enough, I mean they're just not swell enough. You're much too much, and just too very, very to ever be in Webster's dictionary. And so I'm borrowing a love song from the birds to tell you that you're marvelous, too marvelous for words.
Like adorable and amorous and glorious and glamorous, they're insufficient when applied to you. To be euphemistical, to be eulogistical, I'd have to come up with a million words I never thought I knew. I'd rather be logical, sensible, but I'm incomprehensible whenever I begin to find a phrase. But they never say enough, they never tell enough. I've already told you no vocabulary's well enough. What do I do to say the things I have in mind? It's really absurd, there is no word to fit you. No matter where I look, I always seem to find delight. Double delirious, magnificently mysterious, simply too spectacular to be in my vernacular. So you see, I'm forced to go to the birds. The reason must be quite apparent that you are just too utterly, utterly wonderful and marvelous for words.
Oh, you're too marvelous, too marvelous for words.
Like glorious, glamorous, and that'll stand by amorous.
So too wonderful, dictionary. And so I'm borrowing a love song from the birds to tell you that you're marvelous.
To tell you that you're marvelous.
Tell you that you're marvelous. Too marvelous for words.
I can't forget the night I met you, that's all I'm thinking of. And now you call it madness, but I call it love. You made a promise to be faithful by all the stars above. And now you call it madness, I still call it love. My heart is beating, it keeps repeating for you constantly. You're all I'm needing, and so I'm pleading, please come back to me. You made a plaything out of romance. What do you know of love? That's why you call it madness, but I call it love.